What weapons did they have? The guys in the Toyota.
They had Uzis, I said. Stick to the truth, I thought, like all good scam artists. And a grenade.
Which Uzis?
The micros, little ones.
Magazines?
The short ones, 20 rounds.
Are you absolutely sure?
I nodded.
You an expert?
They were designed by an Israeli army lieutenant, I said. His name was Uziel Gal. He was a tinkerer. He made all kinds of improvements to the old Czech models 23 and 25 until he had a whole new thing going. This was back in 1949. The original Uzi went into production in 1953. It's franchised to Belgium and Germany. I've seen a few, here and there.
And you're absolutely sure these were micro versions with the short mags?
I'm sure.
Okay,
he said, like it meant something to him. Then he walked out of the kitchen and disappeared. I stood there and thought about the urgency of his questions and the wrinkles in Duke's suit. The combination worried me. I found the maid and told her I needed clothes. She showed me a long shopping list and said she was on her way out to the grocery store. I told her I wasn't asking her to go buy me clothes. I told her just to borrow them from somebody. She went red and bobbed her head and said nothing. Then the cook came back from somewhere and took pity on me and fried me some eggs and bacon and made me some coffee, which put the whole day in a better light. I ate and drank, and then I went up the two flights of stairs to my room. The maid had left some clothes in the corridor, neatly folded on the floor. There was a pair of black denim jeans and a black denim shirt, black socks and white underwear. Every item was laundered and neatly pressed. I guessed they were Duke's. Bex or Richards would have been too small, and Paulie's would look like I was wearing a tent. I scooped them up and carried them inside, locked myself in my bathroom and took my shoe off and checked for email. There was one message. It was from Susan Duffy. It said, "Your location pinpointed by map. We will move up 25 miles south and west of you to motel near I-95. Response from Powell, quote, "Your eyes only. Both DD after 5. 10-2, 10-28, unquote. Progress? I smiled. Powell still talked the language. Both DD after 5 meant both guys had served 5 years and then been dishonorably discharged. 5 years is way too long for the discharges to have been related to inherent ineptitude or training screw-ups. Those things would have been evident very early. The only way to get fired after 5 years is to be a bad person. And 10-2, 10-28 left no doubt about it. 10-28 was a standard radio check response, meaning loud and clear. 10-2 was a standard radio call for ambulance urgently needed. But read together as MP's covert slang, ambulance urgently needed, loud and clear, meant these guys need to be dead. Make no mistake about it. Powell had been in the files, and he hadn't liked what he had seen. I found the icon for reply and typed, "No progress yet. Stay tuned." Then I hit send now and put the unit back in my shoe. I didn't spend long in the shower. Just rinsed the gymnasium sweat off and dressed in the borrowed clothes. I used my own shoes and jacket and the overcoat Susan Duffy had given me. I walked downstairs and found Zachary Beck and Duke standing together in the hallway. They both had coats on. Duke had car keys in his hand. He still hadn't showered. He still looked tired, and he was scowling. Maybe he didn't like me wearing his clothes. The front door was standing open, and I saw the maid driving past in a dusty old Saab, off to do the household's marketing. Maybe she was going to buy a birthday cake. "Let's go," Beck said, like there was work to be done and not much time to do it in. They led me out through the front door. The metal detector beeped twice, once for each of them, but not for me. Outside, the air was cold and fresh. The sky was bright. Beck's black Cadillac was waiting on the carriage circle. Duke held the rear door, and Beck settled himself in the back. Duke got into the driver's seat. I took the front passenger seat. It seemed appropriate. There was no conversation. Duke started the engine and put the car in gear and accelerated down the driveway. I could see Pauly far ahead in the distance, opening the gate for the maid and the sob. He was back in his suit. He stood and waited for us, and we swept past him and headed west, away from the sea. I turned around and saw him closing the gate again. We drove the 15 miles inland and turned north on the highway toward Portland. I stared ahead through the windshield and wondered exactly where they were taking me and what they were going to do with me when they got me there. They took me right to the edge of the port facilities outside the city itself. I could see the tops of ships' superstructures out on the water and cranes all over the place. There were abandoned containers stacked in weedy lots. There were long, low office buildings. There were trucks moving in and moving out. There were seagulls in the air everywhere. Duke drove through a gate into a small lot made of cracked concrete and patched blacktop. There was nothing in it except for a panel van standing all alone in the center. It was a medium-sized thing, made from a pickup frame with a big, boxy body built onto it. The body was wider than the cab and wrapped up over it. It was the kind of thing you find in a rental line. Not the smallest they have to offer, not the largest. There was no writing on it. It was entirely plain, painted blue with rust streaks here and there. It was old, and it had lived its life in the salt air. "Keys are in the door pocket," Duke said. Beck leaned forward from the back seat and handed me a slip of paper. It had directions on it to some place in New London, Connecticut.
"Drive the truck to this exact address. It's a parking lot, pretty much the same as this one. There'll be an identical truck already there. Keys in the door pocket. You leave this one, you bring the other one back here."
"And don't look inside either one," Duke said.
"And drive slow," Beck said. "Stay legal. Don't attract attention."
"Why? What's in them?"
"Rugs," Beck said from behind me. "I'm thinking of you is all. You're a wanted man. Better to keep a low profile. So take your time. Stop for coffee. Act normally."
They said nothing more. I got out of the Cadillac. The air smelled of sea and oil and diesel exhaust and fish. The wind was blowing. There was indistinct industrial noise all around and the shriek and caw of gulls. I walked over to the blue truck, passed directly behind it, and saw the roller door handle was secured by a little lead seal. I walked on and opened the driver's door, found the keys in the pocket, climbed inside and started the engine, belted myself in and got comfortable, and put the thing in gear and drove out of the lot. I saw Beck and Duke in the Cadillac, watching me go. Nothing in their faces. I paused at the first turn and made the left and struck out south.